Well, my starting point is that we haven't seen the improvements that certainly I hoped for when Blair won the 1997 election. I mean, I believed then that he was passionate about education, as he said he was, famously, and I thought that he would have the willpower and focus to see it through. Now, for a whole variety of reasons which you may or may not wish to explore, I don't think it's happened. And the first chapter of the book looks at the statistics that are paraded every year, GCSE and A-level statistics, to prove, in inverted commas, to the public and everybody interested that, in fact, everything is getting better, you know, the dumbing down argument. So what I've done in the first chapter is to look at specimen GCSE, well, now GCSE, but going back O-level papers, and just printing some of the questions and showing people the intellectual demand of O-levels and A-levels going back into the 60s. Indeed, I think I quote one paper from 1929, a school leaving certificate paper. And I think that if you actually look at the questions which were asked and compare those questions to the questions that are set now, it's unarguable that the demand has been reduced, and that explains why these statistics getting, for example, you know, 25% getting A's and A stars at A level has gone up, whilst we have brilliant schools and brilliant teachers. I mean, I think it's quite important to stress that, because part of the mythology about me is that I'm just totally dismissive of everything, particularly everything in the state, and it is simply not true. I mean, I say it's simply not true because if you look at the annual reports that I was responsible for as chief inspector, I mean, I brought in, I think they still do it, the list of schools that have achieved outstanding reports in the particular year. I've always wanted to get credit for those schools and those teachers who deserve credit. So it's not a blanket criticism, but I fully accept that there are schools that buck the trend. But nevertheless, I don't think that anybody who is interested in education, parent, professional, businessman, politician, whoever, can sit back and say that we have anything approaching the world-class education that we should have. I think that there are two beliefs that have underpinned Labour's approach to education reform, and indeed seem to underpin Cameron's approach too. And in fact, I think it's the ninth chapter of the book, is pretty critical, very critical. It's called Gove or Yet More Balls. And the argument essentially is Conservative education policy under Gove and Cameron really any difference from the kind of policies that Balls and before Balls or the other secretaries of state that I forget and Brown and Blair have pursued? And I don't think it is fundamentally. But anyway, going back to the reasons and the two basic beliefs. The first belief, and the chapter is called Has Mr. Balls Met Jimmy Shepherd? And Jimmy Shepherd, if you've read your D.H. Lawrence, which do you remember, The Education of the People? I mean, in The Education of the People, Lawrence says he has this boy he refers to, Jimmy Shepherd, and he says, in essence, God has not made Jimmy Shepherd very bright. Why do we think that we can make him brighter than God made him? And the argument of the chapter is that whilst we have to do everything for every child, of course, the belief that every child can achieve 5 good GCSEs, which Adonis said in the last year that he was Minister for Education, you know, he said there's no reason why any child from any background of any intelligence can't. I think that is ridiculous. I mean, Lawrence argued it's ridiculous, and I think that Lawrence was right. And the belief that every child can, and therefore the necessity of the government to prove that that belief is right, has led, in my view, to the dumbing down of the curriculum. It's led to various kinds of social engineering, which have actually been destructive of what I mean by education, which of course raises the question, well, what do I mean by education? And I mean fundamentally I'll use the word transmission as shorthand, but I know it's a loaded word that people won't like. And if it means delivery of education, that's not what I mean at all. I mean, I quote the philosopher Michael Oakeshott in the book at a number of occasions. And I mean, Oakeshott's central idea about education is that education, if it's anything, is a conversation between the generations. That's Oakeshott's phrase. A conversation in which the young are initiated into those aspects of our culture that the society deems to be worth preserving. So I think that, yes, in primary schools, every child should have the opportunity to make as much progress as they can in that cultural inheritance, English, maths, physics, the arts, history, geography, the traditional subjects of the curriculum. And I think it's very important that those subjects remain real history, real geography. And I'll come to why I stress that in a moment. But every child should have the opportunity to do that in primary school, and probably through to 12 to 13. But after that, if we're interested in, on the one hand, developing educational academic excellence for those youngsters who have got the academic talent to do that, we've got to recognise that that means stretching and challenging them, and that some children are simply not going to be able to move much farther down that road. And those that can't, then I think it is vitally important that we develop alternative curricula, vocational, practical curricula, in a way that neither the Conservatives did when they were in power, nor Labour has done. And this, again, is one of my big criticisms, that because Labour and Conservatives seem to be committed to a belief in equality, which means all children are equal in the sense that they can all travel down the same road in a meaningful way, which I don't think they can for the reasons that I've explained, we in fact have failed to develop the kind of education that actually would make life worthwhile for a significant percentage of young people. I mean, I've taught, and I can still remember looking back, trying to interest children who had no interest whatsoever in Macbeth or whatever, teaching English. They didn't want to be in the classroom. I mean, if I'm honest, I didn't want them to be in the classroom either, because they were disruptive of children who did want to learn. What was the point? And if we had had a system whereby those young people were able to follow practical vocational courses, which gave them a sense of worth, a sense that they weren't dull and less intelligent than everybody else, then I think it would have been much better for them, it would have been much better for the other kids in the classroom, and ultimately it would be much better for society.
Who are those young people?
Who are they? Mm. Well, I mean, when you say who, I mean, who do you mean? I mean, what do you mean? They are children from a variety of backgrounds. It's not a comment on social class, although we can explore that. It is a recognition that if you've got 100% of, you know, 100% of youngsters in England today, a percentage, and Lawrence said 50%, which I think is probably a bit draconian, but a significant percentage of these youngsters, from whatever their social and family background, are simply not cut out for academic education.